Yeah, I think everybody in the room should know me, so I completely skip the intro and what is Zenit and so on. I've been here a few times, or not in this room, but on some kind of Samba XP stage. Locking.tdb without locks. So this is going to be a talk that is looking pretty deeply at the core infrastructure that we have in Samba. And when I sat on the train with Michael coming to Berlin here, he said, yeah, when introducing new developers to Samba, all these whatever deep mechanisms that we have are quite intricate, and it's quite a web of dependencies and so on and APIs. And he told me, please expand on giving an overview of the TDB infrastructure and all that stuff around that we have. And that's what I did. And this talk was announced as locking.tdb without locks. And yeah, that's where we will eventually get. And I will try a demo somewhere later. So, two machines. Can you read that? Great. Okay, I only have eight real slides, 10 slides overall with the inevitable question at the end. So only 8 slides. What is TDB? You know all this, all right, but just give me a quick overview. It's our trivial database is our central data store for everything that our different daemons need to communicate with each other. And it's an API that is similar, or which is modeled after DBM models. So you have TDB store, key value, TDB fetch, TDB whatever, traverse, pretty standard key value API. It has some unique features that haven't been available. I mean, you know this pattern. CDB just came into existence because there was no whatever, something IP allocator. And at the time when TDB was developed, the main thing that did not exist was a shared writer key value database. So all of these DBM-like APIs, libraries, only had single writer, which is not really good. They all caught up in the meantime, but when it was developed, nothing was there. TDB is a hash table with a linked list overflow. So choose your hash table modulo wisely and large enough so you don't get linear linked lists. It is a shared MMAP, essentially, with a lock per hash list, hash chain. And it has seen a lot of tuning in the last years. So it's really heavily optimized for small read-write traffic, small meaning in the order of a couple of hundred bytes for a key-value combination. We have a single free list, and we obviously, if you just have a memory management via a single free list, you've got problems. We have done a lot of work to spread out this single free list to all the hash chains, lots of details. We have implemented reduced free list fragmentation, thanks to Michael Adam. And yeah, it's our core data structure for SMBDs and WinBind to communicate to each other. So, what is locking.tdb? To me, at least, I mean, there are many other TDB files, but to me, locking.tdb is still the central core database for our semantics that we have beyond POSIX, which is share modes, essentially. Share modes, oplocks, leases, whatever. Metze is looking a bit, whatever. Yeah, it's not necessarily a good thing that it's so centralized and so on, but it's there. And to me, this is still the central, most heavily contended database that we actually in the field see problems with. And what it does is it protects every open and close operation, essentially. And quite a few other operations, but it protects every open and close. Why do we have to do that? A file open in SMB terms is much more than a file open on the POSIX is. As a simple example, when a Windows client wants to create a new file, it can also, for example, send us a full ACL, and this needs to be some way atomic. We can't really be atomic with POSIX clients, but we can be atomic relative to other Windows clients, saying, okay, this file is created, And other Windows clients can only ever look at it after the ACLA has been correctly set. And there's something you do. You have to do the create operation in POSIX, and then you have to do some set attributes, whatever, set ACLA, whatever operation. And this needs to be protected by a critical region or whatever. And so we are using the locking.tdb both as a data store and also as kind of a mutex for this kind of operations here. It protects them. And this is, well, kind of a mix of responsibilities, and we want to split stuff, and yeah, that's where we're going here. One thing that you see here is unlink. Wait a second, why is unlink being protected by this one here, by locking.tdb? Well, you need to know, probably everybody in this room here knows, that unlink is being done while a file is being closed. So open and close are protected, and right now, and this is in fact a problem, we delete files while holding a locking.tdb chain lock. And this has caused no ends of trouble for us in the past. Try to delete a file from a whatever slow FAT formatted drive. It's going to take ages. There are cases in GPFS where unlink needs to retrieve data from tape just to keep whatever snapshot semantics, right, whatever details. So it happens that when you unlink a file that is migrated away that also has something, some snapshot somewhere, TSM gets back the file from tape before the unlink returns, and this can take ages. It's not a good idea to hold a whole hash chain for this operation, so we need to get rid of this. Also, it's not only locking.tdb that is locked. What we do is we lock more than one database at once, simultaneously. And this, yeah, gave Amit some more gray hair in the very recent past. I mean, so this is all okay as long as we only have a single Samba daemon. Because, yeah, you have two records that are locked in two different databases, and we deliberately had to introduce the very obvious deadlock thing is now being maintained inside Samba. So there can't be any place anymore where we first lock locking.tdb and brlock, and another place where it's vice versa, the other way around. So this can't happen anymore. But there are some, I never get this really right, but there are some circumstances when the CTDB recovery comes in and SMBD wants to lock holds one lock, wants to acquire another one, and some demaster operation needs to go back and forth and recovery steps in where this completely breaks. So we deadlock with CTDB. Surprisingly, this deadlock has been in there forever, but something must have changed that we now do these duplicate locks or simultaneous locks more often. So some releases ago, this just popped up and became a problem. So Amitai had to do this parallel database recovery. And also in parallel, I started this effort to get rid of the really low-level locks. So just to give you a little overview or an idea why I'm doing this. Okay, how do we get there? First, there was TDB. TDB is very low level. I mean, it's a small library, very self-contained, separately published. Obviously, it does all we need, but it does a bit more. And when you look at the API, it actually exposes the fact that it's a hash chain structure. For example, there's an API called TDB chain lock. Hey, what's a chain lock? I want to do a record lock. And I don't care about that it's a chain. The low-level TDB has extremely tricky semantics around locking. And I really had to find out the hard way when converting from fcontrol locks to mutexes. Really getting that right together with CTDB was really tough. Took a while. TDB, as a separately published library, is not aware of our memory allocator TELOC. And yeah, so the real reason to put an abstraction around this, an indirection, was actually we wanted to get clustered. And clustering means that the whole data store for our open-close, for our share mode database, for locking.tdb, needs to be completely different for the clustered case than for the local case. And back in, whatever, 2006 time something, I went through and said, okay, what do we really need from the TDB API regards to locking semantics, regards to whatever records? And I put in this DBRep API, and it used to be in former times a really trimmed down version of the TDB API that has TELOC support, which makes it easy to keep a lock on the record and then drop the lock when some external SIB request just is canceled or whatever. All this TELOC magic makes locking, unlocking from an API point of view much easier than it was before. In case you haven't seen it, let me show you the DBRep API. We have libdbrep subdirectory, and the heart of the thing is fetch locked. This is an API that that's the core of our problems, and it's the core of our routines to maintain consistent locking across the cluster and so on. What does it do? You open a TDB, you open a whatever database. It can be a local TDB, it can be a cluster TDB, it can be, we have some other backends that are not really used. It can be anything. So you get a DB context, and you want a key, you want to fetch a record that is indexed by key. TDB data is just whatever, a blob, length and buffer. You give it a TELOC memory context, and I'm skipping over the TELOC semantics here, and what you get, and this is not the nicest API, you get a DBRep record. You will see we don't have a proper mechanism to report different kinds of errors, so we need to fix this, but yeah, it's get a record or not, so we need to fix it. But this is the core of the API. And with this record, then you can do lots of things like, you can get the key, you can get the value, you can store stuff and you can delete stuff and so on. And this DBRep fetch locked does two things. First, it pulls the data out of the database into whatever RAM or whatever it fetches. It tells CTDB, hey, go fetch the DMaster to a local or go to the LMaster and find the data. That's the first task. The second task is That's the fetch piece. The locked piece is, as long as I hold this data structure, this DB record, I have the exclusive lock on this record. So I can do whatever I want to do, and I can only hope that CTDB doesn't want to do recovery, because for this database, at this point, as long as I hold the lock, it can't. Because a hash chain is locked, and part of the recovery is walking on hash chains, collecting all data, get a consistent view in the cluster, and push it everywhere. If I have a lock, this doesn't work. So, that's DBRep. Enter glock. TDB serves two purposes now. The first is the one that I pointed out earlier. This very fast and whatever, low-level, small database, small key record, database that has a lot of heavy churn. By the way, we are actually seeing problems by locking.tdb having to be flushed out to disk every now and then. So anybody with a large machine with a lot of churn better move locking.tdb to var/temp, defshm, to tempfs. Because what happens is you have a lot of churn on this whatever 500 megabyte file. And when the node goes down, this data isn't worth anything anymore anyway. We have to rebuild it somehow. So there is no reason to put this on disk at all. We have mmapped it in all SMBDs anyway, and but the fact that we have this in varctdb somewhere on a real rotating Rust directory tells our operating system, hey, we are writing like mad here. This data is this data is valuable. Please flushly put this on disk every now and then. And if your rotating Rust is rotating slowly, this can really take down your system. So put locking.tdb and others somewhere else that is either fast to flush or doesn't flush at all. So the other one that we have is persistent databases that are replicated across a cluster. And back in times when we wanted to get the persistent databases with data that needs to survive a cluster outage, a node outage, when we wanted to get that into CTDB, we had a lot of discussions with Ronnie, and Ronnie really said, no, CTDB cannot provide global logs. This discussion went on a few times, back and forth, no, we can't do this. So we had a lot of trouble trying to get replicated data in the cluster correct. And what we finally did is we implemented this glog abstraction, which does the following. It implements fcontrol logs in user space. So now what we can do is glog, let's try take a look at the glog API. So you have to create a glog context. And you can log something global indexed by name, which shows whatever, not the key value thing, the not the, the blob thing we for some, it doesn't really matter. We have strings here, so we chose that. What we have actually implemented is shared logs. Nobody uses them, but we have implemented them. Probably they don't work because nobody uses them. And yeah, we can try for a while and eventually it will time out to acquire a global cluster-wide log. What is this global cluster-wide log? It's a record in a non-persistent TDB, one of these very fast, small record ones, that holds the locker's process ID essentially, node number PID, as the only contents. And the first implementation of the glog, so what you do is I do a glog log. Glog puts myself as the server ID into the record, named by the log, named by the log name. Somebody else wants to come in and also log the log. They have to wait for me. The first implementation of glog went in and said, okay, let's put an array of waiters there. And when I now come in and unlock the log, I look at the list of waiters and send messages. Hey, just retry. First come, first serve, same logic. Okay. Enter DBRev watch. The glog was now the third place in our code where someone waits for record changes. Okay. Glog was taken. Locker was there. I add myself to the array of waiters, and I want to be notified when somebody drops the lock, essentially removes himself from the locker's field, from the lock field. And I said, there's a pattern there. Oblock break waiters. How did oblock breaks work previously? We had this field in the locking.tdb where I don't really remember what it was called, the real name of the definition, but you could enter yourself in the array of share mode entries for a file. Hey, I'm waiting for this, for something to happen. I send an oblock break to the oblock holder, and then when the oblock was dropped, there was special code that walked this list of share mode locks. Are there any special entries for people waiting for the oblock to be broken? Likewise for sharing violation, 1 second delay. Is Chris in the room? No, he isn't. So we had this stupid thing in SMB1 when the sharing violation response was delayed by 1 second. We had to find out, Chris found out by inspecting NT source code that is not 1 second, it's 5 times 200 milliseconds. So the SMB server was polling 5 times with a 200 millisecond delay until it gave up. And yeah, so same thing. Second opener on a file saw a sharing violation somewhere in the logging database, and we had to wait 1 second before we actually replied to the client. And if in between somebody came in and closed the file, which actually happens, the closer of the file needs to walk the list, is there anybody waiting for the share mode delay, and notify. So same pattern. And this pattern where, okay, I'm waiting for something to happen on record, that was abstracted out by DBRep Watch. Here we are. I don't know why it changed on disk, but apparently it did. Okay. And this, by the way, is a bit more than master. It's not master. Do I have master somewhere? I do all my coding in DevSHM. I have backups. So this is DBRep Watch Send. What does it do? This is an asynchronous T-Event Rec-based API where I can do the following. I have a record locked. And I want to be notified when something changes on this record. So I have my record locked. I know that I'm waiting for the op lock to break. What I do is I create this T-Event Rec, DB Record Watch Send. And what then happens if somebody else changes the file, I will be notified, changes the record, I will be notified, this will return. And it will be give me the locked record back after a change. So, still with me? Okay. How is this implemented? It's implemented by a separate. It's implemented by yet another TDB file, dbrepwatchers.tdb. So all these at least two places, glog and logging.tdb, that had these arrays of people who were waiting for something, have been moved out to the dbrepwatchers.tdb. And there I now store all waiters that want something, want to know something when a record changes. So whenever somebody changes a record in a database where dbrepwatchdb has been called, the API piece that stores contents to the database will look at dbrepwatchers and automatically notify the waiters. So, and now really we kind of enter the new territory. It turns out that, typically we are waiting for someone to do something. And this someone is, in our terms, is always the server ID. So we are waiting for some other process to give up a log, to reply to an op lock break or something. So there is always something, somebody, someone that we are waiting for. We have been very specific in lease break X. They have to be done by a specific SMBD that we have sent our lease break request to. Glog is to be unlocked by a lock holder. There is a process holding a lock. The question now is, what happens if that guy dies hard? In Glog, we just retry. In, I think we have a 5-second, whatever, retry loop, 5 seconds plus randomize. I think in the locking.tdb case, we also do that, but it's not ideal. So it's polling is never good. The problem here is we can't really monitor. I mean, Linux, I think, has a Netlink API that I can monitor other arbitrary other processes to die. But this is Linux only. FreeBSD, I think, has some k-event thing for that, for something similar. I don't know how reliable it is. But the most reliable piece here is sick child. The parent SMBD can always tell, hey, something has died hard or has exited. Lately, we have changed our internal messaging. And I thought, well, the internal messaging has two components. First, every process right now, as it stands now in master, every process in the participating in summer messaging has a socket, holds a Unix domain datagram socket. Because you really can't bind reliably or exclusively on a name, what I do is I have a separate log file. Every process holds an fcontrol log. So what in theory you could do is everybody who monitors another process for death could have a blocking thread trying to fcontrol log this file. And I'm sure this will not scale at all on any platform. And that's the main reason why I finally got around to do my stream space messaging. I talked about that on Monday with Amite quite a while. What is it? This is not a talk about stream space messaging, but it's basically this Unix domain datagram socket is replaced by stream sockets, which means I can now send a stream socket to somebody else and wait for readability. And if that somebody else dies, that socket will die. I will get notified. This is portable. Also, oops, again, I shouldn't click here. So this is locally, it's a solved problem. Monitoring in the current code that I have, this is a solved problem. I have a small API for this. This is in messages stream. No, this is my master. Lib messages stream.h. The function name really becomes long at this time, but so what I do is I asynchronous request wait for another process to die. Exit wait send. Messaging context, no messaging context. A T-event context, a PID, hey, I want to watch this guy die with this unique ID. I'm not sure if we shouldn't move this to a full struct server ID, but that's a separate discussion. But I mean, hey, I can now wait for others to die. Yeah.
So under the covers, that's basically creating a socket pair, something,
yeah.
Sending one of the ends over,
yeah.
And just waiting for readability.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant.
Obvious. Just. So now our dbrep API grew an argument. This is the blocker that I'm waiting for. Please watch that guy. Please also watch that guy for death or to die. And if it dies, tell me. And what I have here is a Boolean in the receive function. Yes, the blocker you sent me died. And this is kind of just convenience here that I transfer the blocker from send to receive. That's not strictly necessary by the API, but it's convenient. So I send out a record, I send out a watch. I'm waiting for this process to send me the OBlock break. break request or break acknowledge. And if that dies, I also want to retry. I want to do something. And essentially what this variable, or what this Boolean now does is it gives me an indication whether the record natively and genuinely changed or if the blocker died. Essentially what the eOwner dead error message from the mutex log actually is. Yeah?
Right, one question I'm a little confused. So the dbref record watch send, isn't that the, like, okay, I want to get a hold of this record basically.
No.
So why does it, so?
No. The dbref, I want to get hold of this record. That's the dbref fetch log, as always.
Yeah, right.
The dbref record watch send is, I have this record, I found I can't continue. Please tell me when the record changes so that I can recheck the condition whether I'm still blocked.
Okay, it's just, it has changed. It's nothing like, okay, the
no,
first
no, no.
entry is gone.
Yeah, like, right. It just has changed.
So, theoretically, this doesn't protect you if the owner is in the middle of writing it.
No, the owner can't write. Because this watch send requires that I have the record lock.
But when you do the watch send, you give it up on.
Yeah, but that's like condition variable, mutex, whatever.
Yeah.
It's atomic.
What I'm saying is that if you get notified because it's died,
it could have died while writing.
That's right.
But I know. So I can do cleanup routines.
Okay, yeah. So long as it doesn't...
I don't yet, but I could.
Yeah, so long as it doesn't mutilate the record beyond recognition,
yeah.
You should be able to continue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the background for my question was that I was kind of puzzled. Okay, so what the pattern is, the caller has inspected the record. Okay, this guy is blocking me.
Yeah,
and
from continuing.
I'm watching the change and say, also notifying me.
Yeah, if that guy dies. Yeah, Metze?
Does it belong in that code? Could we have the situation where we wait for multiple?
I haven't yet come across it, but of course it can be extended. I haven't come across, I thought about that, but the situation so far, I mean, we only have exclusive logs in Glog. If we have shared logs, in Glog situation, for example, would change. But I haven't yet, so... Possibly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, it goes on. It's not finished yet. Pardon?
It still puzzles me that you combine this very generic thing, tell me it's changed anyways.
Yeah, but all places where I do a watch record, I also separately have to do, hey, tell me when that guy dies. And this is optional. This is kind of optional.
Okay, sure.
So if you just pass in a null PID, it doesn't do that. Okay. Finally, dbref unlock. No lock. So essentially, this is now putting together the pieces of the puzzle. This is simple now. It's very simple code. Double locks are bad. I already said all this, double locks are bad for some reason, gave Amitai a bad time. Cluster file systems can block SMBD completely in D for a very long time. Essentially, there are cluster file systems that are happily just stalling everything forever until reboot. So this is bad. Okay, the file we are looking at is dead anyway, but it shouldn't affect others. In particular, not CDDB. It shouldn't affect others on the same hash chain and so on. Another one, with the change to mutexes, we lost some very, very handy diagnostic tool, which is proc locks. Hmm?
Mutex check.
Yes, no. But it, I mean, hmm?
We have it in CDDB, but it's not portable.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it looks at the internal structures, right? Yeah, which is, yeah. So really diagnosing log contention in the customer field. I mean, having Hawk logs as part of the regular I have a problem system dump was very handy. So, yeah. What this DBRAP no log now does, and it's far from finished, it only has fetch log and parse and whatever, unlock something. It adds something just to the record. It just adds the locker field to the record contents. So what it does is, it does a normal fetch log on the TDB, CTDB. But the only thing it does is, it looks at a special field as part of the data in the TDB record. Is this record locked? And if it isn't, the calling process puts itself as the locker. It drops the OS level database lock again, knowing that it has put itself into the, hey, I'm locked. Everybody else trying to also do this fetch locked does the same thing. I fetch lock for a very brief time. I fetch lock the database record. I see, hey, somebody has locked it. I just send a dbrep watch send with that guy as the blocker and put myself to sleep. And I unlock the record again. So this has a lot of advantages. I don't do any operating system, I don't do any file system calls anymore while holding an operating system lock. And that's a huge advantage in a clustered environment. So what about speed? For each lock and unlock, we now have to do two operating systems unlocks. We have to do some data churn more, but ignore that. But we have to do two, record mutex lock or record mutex unlock. But I would suspect that with mutex, actually, the non-contained case, this is not measurable. I haven't measured it yet. I'm not that far yet. Yeah? Okay. Even in the non-contained case? Okay, CTDB has now put for CTDB case.
Yes.
It's going to put a lot more stress on CTDB. But we can lift that. We can remove that stress. Okay, so implementation details. DBRAP no lock is not exactly lockless because I still have to do my DBRAP fetch lock for the lower level database. But the critical region that is actually locked is much, much smaller. No file system operations under the lock anymore. This will also, whatever, cause some trouble, I guess, right now. With the current implementation of the DBRAP watch API, it will, in the content, what? Simo?
Maybe you should call it DBRAP short lock. It's a little bit misleading.
Yeah. Okay.
Almost close.
Oh my. So, it always locks two databases very briefly, the locking.tdb or whatever we are putting under that regime and the dbrf watch.tdb. The critical region operations now could be delegated to something like a finite change machine, a finite state machine. Because it's very clearly defined what we do. And so that's the piece where we could move something of this logic into CTDB. We don't actually have to fetch the record. If it's empty, for example, I can tell the L-master, hey, put myself into the record. I don't actually have to fetch it. And this will give a lot less high hop counts in CTDB. If we move some of that logic into CTDB or wherever. Also, with this very confined critical region, it might become possible that we have better ways to replicate this actually across a cluster. Because right now, one blocking factor for doing this properly is we actually need the locking semantics on the lower level TDB. And with this, we don't anymore. We could now move our, throw out our TDB, our well-tuned TDB, and move in LMDB. LMDB doesn't have record locks. That's the main blocker for us. So we become a lot more flexible by not really requiring extended operating system locks for file system operations anymore. Then, open issues, performance, we have to measure it. My demo will be quite slow. Scalability with thousands of waiters. So this is kind of, this DBRAP watch thing is kind of similar to the notify, to the file change notify. And we have tuned file change notify with a separate daemon. We could, in theory, do something similar here with a daemon that handles all these. And what I have not solved yet is watching process death on remote nodes. I do polling here. And you will see that in the demo. Okay, demo time. What do I have here? Debian, Debian 2. Two machines. .97 here. And .147. That's what DHCP gave me. CTDB status. 2-node cluster. Just CTDB running. No SMBD, no nothing. What I have written is a little torture test with a misleading comment. Yeah, 3 minutes. Hey, there's only lunch after me. Essentially, this is ping pong for the, you know, all the well-known ping pong program to really torture people. This is ping pong for TDB. So I grab a record. I grab a second record. I put first record free, and this in a loop on the same TDB. And this is just really to get maximum contention. And what it does is, if I run this on one node, local DBRAP, no lock, same semantics as with. So, yeah. This walking stuff, and this is the small test case that I can now use to tune this stuff. Other machine, same process, no lock TDB. It really goes down. This is not the spectacular piece, but this goes across the cluster. Let's look at what happens inside. Of course, that's on one of the hosts. CTDB is really, really, really busy doing stuff, pushing back and forth records. Then I have my SMB torture, and then I have my net command. What's the net command doing here? I have one more little hidden secret that I have not spoken about yet. This also has code to lift the internal messaging. The DBRAP watch store notifies the other one, and that does messaging to the other node, to the locker. And this is now part of a message proxy process that I've implemented to not even more overload MTA's code. So, and the point is, if I now just have one of these processes die, the other one goes down and directly goes back up. I restart it, it just works, goes, and I go to the other side. It goes down, it pulls, hey, the other one has died. Let me just show you the databases involved. Let's do the contented case. That's the records. And T CTDB traverse is not really deterministic in terms of getting an accurate view at a certain point in time. So what I'm doing, these are completely contentless records. There is no content here in the records. This is just the locker field. And the indication for unlocked is something, some zeros here. Probably that's the PID or whatever. Somewhere there's the indication that's a zero unlocked, that's the PID. The other one that is involved is DBRAP watchers. And this is probably the one that really gives CTDB the hard work. And yeah, that is, somebody is watching this record, which is a hash of whatever database and key. And this guy here is watching it, and yeah, this will rapidly change. Fun? Yeah. Like mad. Yeah. So, and what you I can't really show you is proc locks being empty while the record is held, but yeah, you have to trust me on that.
So, can you do the corresponding torture with the regular TDB?
Yes, I can, of course. I haven't done that yet for this demo, but of course I can, yeah. Although this is more difficult. I have to use more than one database. Because with this regime, I'm not risking deadlock due to overlapping hashes. I can't, with TDB, you can't really lock two records at the same TDB.
Right, you have to make sure it's in a chain.
Yes, yeah. Yes, but...
It sucks anyway, but...
Yeah, yeah, right. But I can do that, of course. I haven't done that yet. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that's my talk. Questions? Oops.
When do we get it?
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Look at my whip branch and review it.
No.
I mean, this is subtle stuff, and yeah. I need really somebody else to go over it and go through it and understand it. 24, it was 24. But that's just marshaled server ID structure. Yeah, but still the implementation is not trivial. So, more questions? Okay, then.
Okay.
Enjoy. Foo. Yeah.
Thanks, Volker.